Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. This week, I record from the house. Got all the my little corner in the living room here. And so I'm joined with Dave Allardyce, also stage name Dave Paradise, and Neil Strachan. And Neil works with Balvini, Dave works with Glenfiddich, and although we no longer do brand-oriented interviews, I am friends with Dave. I wanted to catch up. I wanted to get some feedback. Let's have a few drinks. Let's talk. And this week's episode is a casual conversation with two people who happen to work for a brand, but is not a brand-oriented interview. So I just want to give a quick shout-out. We talk about cash strength offerings, and I give a quick shout out to Amroot. Obviously, those guys are a sponsor of the show, some of my favorites, and are literally blowing it out of the water the last 2 years with their relevance within the single malt community. I couldn't be a bigger fan. We have to discuss Dave's quick hiatus from the spirits industry for a sabbatical, which was pretty interesting. So without further ado, please welcome Neil and Dave from William Grant & Sons, and this is a non-official interview with two guys who happen to work for the same brand. And without further ado, cheers. Neil, welcome to the show. Dave, it's great to see you.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So we've talked about this on the show recently. I thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, or maybe you guys have been, your accents aren't, you're not from Texas, right? You guys are definitely not native Texans. I thought the whole idea of it being taboo to have drinks at 10 o'clock in the morning were more of an American thing. I always thought it was European overseas, that the concept of time and when you had a drink didn't really matter. Am I wrong?
Depends who this was.
We had a long discussion about this yesterday. Well, I don't know if we had much of a discussion. It was more that I was just preaching to Dave about the benefits of having the opportunity to drink in the morning. Because whenever you're drinking whiskey in the morning, you're always having a good day. So usually it's also when I'm wearing a kilt as well, when it's linked to weddings or Highland Games days or something like that. But they are few and far between when you're stuck in LA for quarantine. So having a fine excuse to open up something with yourself, Christopher, at 10:27 in the morning, it's perfect.
Go ahead.
See, there's a bit of a different opinion between the two of us here, because I said to him last night, I said to Neil, I says, yeah, I'm not planning on drinking on the show tomorrow. I says, I'm trying to have a dry week. And of course, I don't know who I'm trying to kid. So we got something just in case.
Yeah, it's one of those things where years and years ago, not years ago, but I started with my day job 10 years ago, which I no longer work there, but it was shift work, right? So you get off at 7 a.m. and you have yourself a beer and a steak at 7 a.m., but it's the end of your shift. It completely changes your perception of appropriate times for food and drink permanently. So even on my days off, even if I get up at 7 a.m., I may want a beer, so of course I'm having a beer right now.
So thank you very much for that, because you maybe just legitimized my whole thing. Because when I left Scotland originally to work in the Alps, I worked as a kitchen porter, night porter, just so I could snowboard as much as possible. So when I finished my night portering shift in France, there was no better place to go around to the pub, have a couple of pints. But all the Frenchies were on pastis or red wine at that time before their ski instructing. So it's maybe just a thing that if you were working nights at some stage in your life, that legitimizes it for any time of the day.
Moving forward. Now, from what I understand, I think Dave had quite the fun time in Houston this past weekend. So, which, by the way, I don't know why, because it's not like you and I have hung out a bunch of times. But every time I see that you're in Houston and I didn't know about it in advance, I get kind of pissed. I'm like, Dave's in town. It's back when Wingo used to come through. It's like, come on, man. Like, I would love the opportunity to have a drink with you guys.
Well, that's a good point. Actually, the three times that I've come to Houston this year have all been for a very specific reason, and it's been a one-night stay. So the next time I come in, I'm going to make an effort to do a two- or three-night visit and hit yourself up and hit some other people up that I've been meaning to catch up with. But I've been spending a lot of time at Permission with Mr. Nolan.
I couldn't be a bigger fan of Permission. I couldn't be a bigger fan of Peter. And so taking a quick pivot here, let's talk about Dave's role here. Because Dave, last we chatted, I think you were taking a hiatus and then you left. And then what's going on? Are you still with William Grant? Are we still, traveling
back,
around?
Back in action. My territory has shrunk over the years to be focused now solely on Texas. I mean, I might go later in the year to Georgia, for example, or North Carolina, but that will be kind of a one-off. I live in Austin. I'm focused on Dallas and Houston mostly. I went last year, January to July 2020. I was supposed to take, a sabbatical, which ended up being extended till September. So a 9-month break, unpaid.
Yeah.
And
for those who don't know, let's talk about the sabbatical. So Dave's role is a bit of a rock star role. It's like these comedians who travel the world every weekend, 50 something weeks a year. It's very draining, right? So yeah. William Grant, I know that Balcony's also had this because this happened to our colleague Winston, where he needed a break because you get so burned out from the traveling and the talking and talking to people like me and doing all those things. But you came back and you repping the brand hard.
Yeah, well, I had been with the company after about 5-6 years. I knew that the option was there to apply for a sabbatical, right? But I didn't do it immediately. So I did it after about 8.5 years with the company. I put my application in. HR gave me a phone call. And they said, we don't know how to do this. No one's ever asked for a sabbatical, but it is in the handbook. It's a policy that you're eligible after 5 years with the company to take between a 3 and 6 month leave of absence without pay. So like you said, it is a very, very fun job being a brand ambassador, but it's pretty hectic as well. So I made an announcement saying that I was going on sabbatical, and some of my friends were like, a sabbatical from what? Like, you drink whiskey on rooftops. Like, what are you taking a sabbatical from? I was like, well, yeah, you got a fair point there. But anyway, it was literally the best thing I've ever done.
And yeah, it's good for your mental health, I'm sure.
Just the actual ability to wake up in the morning and not have any responsibility. I mean, you've got 4 kids. You have no idea what that feels like anymore, right? But I don't have any children. I'm not married. Fully single, had money in the bank, and just to go away and travel and do what I wanted whenever I wanted, until, of course, about halfway through, a pandemic struck, and that kind of put the brakes on it, but I still had an amazing time, so highly recommend it. Neil, are you past the five-year mark?
Well, I am indeed.
You're next.
Yeah, so Neil, your role with the company at William Grant is...
Very similar to David's, but I'm the face of the Balvenie and in the West Coast. So a slightly smaller team for the Balvenie side, that there's two of us splitting the country. So it's quite a region, although kind of LA is the base. I'm looking forward desperately to getting back to Texas and getting to travel again to speak to the good people down there, because it's been too long.
Yeah, come on over.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Whiskey Social, by the time it finally does happen, would be almost 2 years that we took off, right? So the last one took place in February last year, right before the pandemic hit. And so we're already into a year, and I think we're going to be able to fit it in this year in the fall and permanently lock it in into the fall, which I think a lot of people were hoping to anyways. Whiskeys of the World, I don't know, is a thing anymore, or at least not in Houston. So we're not bumping up right against Doug and his operation. So I think we're going to fit in November, and we're going to throw in the Agave Social too. So I'm just happy to get back out again, to be able to see people. And we're going to do a pig roast at the end of this month with Whistle Pig. And I couldn't be more excited. I got my 5G installed. my second shot is next week. And I can't wait for normality again, you know.
Shout out to Maxwell.
Yeah, shout out to Stephanie Maxwell. As soon as I had the idea, because I want Truth Barbecue, some of the best barbecue in Houston. You really can't. It's some of the best in Texas. It's centrally located. It's not too far off of Shepherd, which is over there by the old Federal location. And we just thought, like, what can we do now that things are lightening up a little bit? So what are you? Let's talk about that barrel of Balvenie you got in front of you.
Oh,
the bottle.
Well, I noticed that, you know, you guys were raising the game with Glenfiddich Grand Cru, and I was just going to start off with a measly, well, not measly, but, you know, the foundations of the Balvenie brand, the Balvenie 12 Double Wood. But seeing as you're taking out the celebration and party whiskey, the first bottle that came to hand was a Balvenie 17-year-old Islay cask, which... is an incredibly rare whiskey nowadays and very sought after. It was the first of our 17-year-old limited edition series that we started in about 2011, if I can remember correctly. And the family that Dave and I work for, William Grant & Sons, has such a huge collection of private casks, so other distilleries' casks.
Give me a second.
And they had a load of casks from a certain distillery in Islay that they were going to empty. So David Stewart thought, oh, I wonder what would happen if we, you know, finished some older Balvenie in these Islay casks. I wonder how it would take on the flavor. So he tried it. He liked the results. And this was the start of the limited edition 17s that now to this day it kind of progressed up onto the 17 Double Wood. But there was about seven or eight limited edition small run finishes. And this was the first one, so it's really rather nice, to be quite honest with you. I don't often get a chance to drink such nice whiskey.
I knew it was coming. There it is, Dave. Listen, man, you gotta buck this idea that it's not okay to have a drink at 10 a.m. Looks fantastic.
This is I was blaming the Kentucky Derby party for my lameness. But I feel recovered. I feel revitalized.
Yeah, yeah. You look great, man. You look happy. You look well rested. And I know I've got the four kids thing, but I also have a partner who kind of helps with that. So our kids being able to quit the day job. There's been a few days where I got that 9 a.m. 9:30 a.m. wake up, and you know, it felt great being able to sleep in. So do we? I know this isn't an official Balvenie or Balvenie or William Grant or Glenfiddich interview, but you guys are probably the most progressive Scotch producer that I know of, and meaning every other year there's either a new bottle, a new label, a new brand, so what's coming down the pipeline? I know that Hudson went through a rebranding package-wise. What's going on with in y'all's perspective worlds? Do we have new products coming out?
Neil?
Okay, I'm getting to start. I was going to let you take the lead there, David. So with the Balvenie front, we keep on basically looking into the future and developing stories about our people. And stories are really the backbone of how we make our whiskey. So as you know, since David has really kind of invented the process of double cask maturation or cask finishing with the Balvenie, there's going to be some quite interesting new finishes coming out and some older products as well that are more in line with some of our kind of styles of David making whiskey. So utilizing marrying tons to marry cask together, there'll be a really beautiful example of that coming out at Q3 this year. And I'm not sure how much I can even talk about that yet, but look out for it because it'll be beautiful, I'm sure.
Yeah, I try to, anytime I get a hint of that, I try to check the Cola website to see if we get an update, you know, because it's usually where you'll find it first before the announcement's made is what's going on in Balvenie's world.
Yeah, it's so much better. People on the outside knowing about that website, so you guys can bring these new bottlings up before I can talk about them. But one thing over the years, I can't really think of a bad whiskey we've ever released. That's one thing with the Balvenie, kind of everything that David puts his name to, it's Balvenie, and it has that ring of quality to it. So,
yeah, I can't think of anything that wasn't well received specifically from Balvenie. What about the?
I think these personal favorites out there for everyone, but you know, if you look across the board, like Glenfiddich, it's a very, very rounded portfolio.
What about Glenfiddich? Is there another experimental series coming down the pipeline?
No, experimental series has actually been phased out. So I believe IPA cask, Project
XX.
20.
Yeah.
XX. And Fire and Cane are not going to be reordered to the US. Whatever we have here is going to be the last of it. So I learned this. I knew that was coming, but I had a chat yesterday with Texas Willie, and he told me that Project 20, Project XX, is no longer going to be ordered. So since that was one of the whiskeys that I had a part in putting together with the ambassador team, I'm going to have to go out now and buy every single Project 20 that I can find. So I appreciate your help if you can find me any of those, Neil. But I should be able to find a few. But what we are doing is an extension to this Grand series. So the 21-year-old Glenfiddich Grand Reserve Rum Cask, then the 23-year-old Grand Cru. Is going to be followed by a 26-year-old. It's called Grand Caron. And we're not actively marketing it here in the US because it's not launching until August. But I can talk about it because it's launched globally already. It's out there. So it's a cognac finish, 26-year-old. So I'm looking forward to that hitting the market. I think it's like 43-point-something%.
Nice. Good to see that back.
Yeah, you know. It's always nice to get a little bit of a boost there. But that is all for now. And then upgrades to the 30, 40, and 50-year-old coming towards next year, end of this year, next year. And then that's really all I can speak of just now. But everything's been refreshed. You know, we had a package refresh about 3-4 years ago, maybe it was 4-5 years ago. And we've just done that again. So everything's looking a lot more streamlined, consistent. And things are looking good.
There's no crossing over the brands, right? Like you would never, I know that you know, obviously, Neil, you guys are friends, but you guys don't actually work together. You don't do events together at all.
We have done and we will do again, but doesn't happen that often, right? I mean, we're usually covering different parts of the country. We're not usually in the same markets at the same time. But trust me, any opportunity we get, we are going to take that. And I think with the fact that we have a travel ban right now for the ambassadors, I've dipped my hand in a little bit more of the Balvenie portfolio than I normally would have recently, just to kind of, you know, it's a case of why not, you know, if I can help, you know. And for example, last Monday, I got to taste the DCS Chapter 3, 1973, which is a 43-year-old Balvenie.
The DCS series, they're gorgeous.
One thing I'll say about that whiskey was Would it be in my top five of favorite tasting whiskies? Answer is no. Is it in the top three of the most interesting and unusual whiskies I've ever tasted? Yes. That was a three-course, that was a five-course meal in a glass. Neil, oh, wow. You could probably expand on that, but it was just unbelievable how much flavor was packed into that.
Yeah, that was the whole point of the compendium, was for David to showcase liquid in the distillery that essentially we couldn't maybe bottle as Balvenie because it's so far away from what the basis of the brand is, a 12 double wood. But I remember that 73 really well. I think it was my favorite in that chapter. And it had that chapter had the oldest whiskey Balvenie had ever released at that stage, a 56-year-old. But that 73 was just gorgeous. And yeah, just a huge, huge whiskey. And so many years later.
It's on the back bar at permission.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it is. Shameless plug for Peter.
Take the shameless plug.
Can we get Pete to give us a discount code for it, do you think, the viewers?
Yeah,
should we just ask that out?
It's I believe it's tip 15% at callback. So let me ask you guys this. I'm curious. You've all worked for this iconic brand, right? Like, I would be willing to say that if you were to list some of the most iconic, world-renowned spirits, that Balvenie, William Grant, Glenfiddich, you guys fit into that category, at least in the top five, if not top 10 of the most well. I think one of the only ones not owned by Diageo, right? My question is, as long as you've been with the company and as much as you've tasted and experienced and you've seen these new additions come out, is there something that you'd like the company to do? I mean, I'll give you an example. Heaven Hill consults with their regional market managers. Kerry Craft was in charge of Texas, South Texas in particular, but they would ask her every year, what do you think we should do? What do you think we should do? And she would always give the feedback that we need to do some Heaven Hill cask strength offerings of the Elijah Craig. And this year they announced, we're now allowing Elijah Craig barrel picks of the barrel proof option. Is there something that Glenfiddich you've always wanted to see them do, but they don't really do, or to have them do on a much larger scale? Same question for Balvenie. You know, like these heavy sherry bombs, Macallan style, or, you know, what's something that you'd love to see from the brand that maybe you've pitched or you've given feedback on, or you just have kept to yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty easy answer to that one, because it's on the same course as what you've just mentioned. Cask strength, higher strength whiskies at an affordable price point, because we had a distillery edition. I think it's still in existence. I think you can only buy it at the distillery shop and maybe one or two other markets. I'm not even sure anymore. But every other cask strength whiskey that we've had in recent years has been a 30, a 34-year-old, some sort of a very, very older vintage type cask that is usually thousands of dollars to buy. So having something in the $100 to maybe $300 or $500 range that is kind of accessible would be cool. We've basically just been told that it's cost prohibitive basically to do it to the scale that we would need to do it at. So it's kind of a no-go at the moment. We ask almost every time we get together with the master distiller, Brian Kinsman, and his answer is usually the same. Brian, we're going to break you down one of these days. But that's really it, because we've been pretty fortunate. Experimental series, we had a nice wine cask finish. We had a peated Glenfiddich. We had a combination of 20 different barrels. We had IPA cask innovation. This one, you know, French sparkling wine cask. I mean, there's been plenty of innovation. There's been plenty of innovation across single malt scotches recently, so we can't really ask for too much more there. It'd be interesting to see what Neil says, but because you've got kind of across the board, you've got some higher strength and you've got plenty of different finishes.
Yeah, again, really fortunate on the Balvenie side that we do have that, some non-chill filtered with the single barrel range age. And You know, I think for me, it's always just interesting to dive back into the history and see how someone that Dave mentioned earlier, Ian Miller, when he was distillery manager, what he was playing around with David Stewart at the time. And there's still a lot of old kind of playing that they did, and experiments in the warehouses are still to be released from us. So it's always nice when you visit like a new distillery and they're talking about grain types, different yeast types, and they're going, oh, we're so innovative. And then next year we drop like a 19-year-old age statement on something. Oh, that was cute. You guys were talking about that to us when you were at the distillery, and then we've got 18 years on it. So there'll be more of that, I'm sure, coming out of the woodwork. But yeah, I'm a big Cask Strength fan, you know, as well. Give me as much Cask Strength whiskey as you possibly can. That's why I cut my teeth drinking when I was 20 in a whiskey bar. Full Cask Strength, straight from the cask.
Well, I loved hearing Dave say that, because Dave used to give me a hard time and our group a hard time because we were the Sherry Bomb, Cask Strength, big punch in the face fan. So to hear Dave advocate for, listen, if I think Glenfiddich could do something as simple as a 10-year-old Sherry matured, Cask Strength offering, you know, even Sherry finished, I think you guys could do it well and it be cost prohibitive. It's just a matter of making that leap. I mean, listen, and I would argue to say that the Scotch category as a whole has done everything they can to be progressive and innovative and try new things. I mean, in a world of encroaching bourbon idiots, Scotch has done everything they can to innovate. That being said, the one thing missing from, I think, the William Grant portfolio is those even younger. I think there's some beautiful. I've got a great bottle. This Amroot I have, 6 years old, peated cask, cask strength, fantastic. We did there's a company called Blackadder that does those raw cask series. They've got a lot of like really great Islay whiskeys that are like 4 years old. It's like super young, but it's like beautiful, robust, like Scottish spirit straight from the cask. I think that's the only thing missing. Other than that, no. Who's complaining about William Grant, right? I mean, between
Can I please jump in on this?
Yeah, yeah.
I cut my teeth as like a young boy opening a whiskey bar that had all the best cask strengths from a Delphi selection. I had a load of Robin Blackadder stuff in there, and this was 14 years ago.
Robin
is certainly a character. And I love those styles, but if we like you, I think you lose what essentially is Glenfiddich if you put Glenfiddich spirit into like a first fill or even an active second fill sherry cask for 10 years. It blows everything that you know of Glenfiddich out of the water. And they'd be certainly casks that you would get some essence of Glenfiddich in, and Brian would do a great job of making it look that way. But would it really be Glenfiddich if it was just a big sherry bomb?
Neil's coming out of his shell here. I got it, Neil. Let me counter argument there. So the Scots are pretty great about reusing casks, right? So don't use first and second fill then. Let's see a third fill in the mix. Let's innovation comes with trying those things. One of the things that Edredauer does to shoot themselves in the foot, in my opinion, is all their sherry casks overpower all of their spirits. So if you get even a young, beautiful, I had this beautiful Signatory that I had purchased. It was a UK exclusive. It was 11-year-old single malt, and it was such a sherry bomb that it punched you right in the face. It was so overwhelming that you really couldn't get nuance. It was good. I liked it, but it wasn't representative of Glenlivet. It wasn't really representative. It was just a sherry bomb scotch. Okay, cool. So use a second fill, use a third fill, but let's see full force spirit, right? Like whether it's Balvenie or Glenfiddich, let me see what you got outside of just the 43 and the 40% ABV range, because I've talked about it. Our marriage bottle for my wife and I is a bottle of Balvenie 15-year single barrel, right? Like every year on our anniversary, we have one pour from this bottle, and it's tracking to hit about our 10-year wedding mark. Like it's the perfect wedding bottle, Balvenie 15 single barrel. But I'd love to see, you know, I'd love to see some more robust, you know, it doesn't have to be 65%, but it'd be cool to see some 55 and 60s in there, you know?
Yeah, oh, I'd like a 65.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of cask strength per se, but higher strength, you know, somewhere up in the high 40s would be just fine.
Sure. I mean, 100 proof would be brilliant. I've had some really good 50% ABV spirits, especially in the realm of cognac and brandy, right? Some grape forward liquid is really shines in that 50 to 55% ABV range. I mean, I'd love to see it. You know, I've been a big fan of you guys for a long time. William Grant can do no wrong. So I always, talking to Danielle locally, I feel really good for the brands that rep brands that are well-loved for these online communities. And I feel really bad for good people who represent brands that are not well-loved by the online community. And that's not something that Dave or Neil has to worry about, because who doesn't love William Grant?
Yeah. I mean, we've both been doing this for a while. I've been full-time with Glenfiddich over 9 years and repped the brands Glenfiddich and Balvenie for 2 years prior to that. And I haven't repped any other brands. And it's just like, if you find a good brand, why not just stick with it? You know?
Yeah.
I know plenty of people that have bounced around and been very successful and enjoyed doing that. But when you work for a brand that you believe in, I feel like the longer, if you're going to stay in the industry, if you stay with one brand, I think it can only add to your credibility, to the brand's credibility.
100%. 100% agree. Yeah, this industry as a whole has a pretty significant turnover rate. So when you do see someone that's been with a brand for so long, and that's not to say that there's not extenuating circumstances. I'm not shitting on anybody, but it does add to your, you know, you are the face for this side of the U.S. for Glenfiddich.
I just want to add to that, like sometimes people, maybe internally in the company, maybe, you know, just other people may ask you, do you know, you're still doing this? And it's like, you look at where you could go in the company or in the industry, and it's like, well, if you already have one of the best jobs in the industry, where do you go from there? Like, do you want to go into the brand manager role where you sat in a desk all day? You know, if you love this type of environment where you're basically your own boss, you're out and about, you set your own schedule, that's like a very sweet drug that's hard to give up. What do you think, Neil?
Oh gosh, yeah. The flexibility that we have and the fun that, you know, I'm a people person. You know, I worked bars before I did this job, and always being around people is what I like doing. And there's no better way of doing it. Yes, we have to put in long, absurd hours traveling to different places, early mornings, late nights. Oh no. Some mornings are worse than others, really, but it's a great job. You know, it's allowed me to see half of the world, being based out of Asia, then now the privilege of having the West Coast of America. So yeah, it's not a job I want to be giving up anytime soon.
And forgive me for encroaching, but I believe both of you are single, correct?
Yes. Eternally single.
Well, the idea of traveling city to city, I would imagine, has its perks.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that off air.
I would love to hear more about Dave's little black book of America that he has as well.
Yeah, I can. It's funny. I won't. Okay, let me make sure I shape this appropriately. Surprising. One of the things at the Whiskey Social is we have a few, you know, you've got tables set up all across the room. We have a few people who will request to sit, like, I want my table next to this person. And Dave is one. Like, anytime William Grant's coming, is Dave coming? They want their table next to the William Grant table. And then Will Schragas from Barrel I have an overwhelming amount of requests where they're like, I want my table next to Will. I want my table next to Will. I'm like, what's... I mean, I've been with the same woman 15 years. I have a very boring life, but there's this rock star lifestyle that you guys are living, traveling the world, seems to be like there's probably some really good stories in there somewhere.
That's good to know. Hurry up and get that social going.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, I normally reject those. I normally reject those requests. That's where I met Dave. I met Dave at Whiskeys of the World 1 year. Like that. That event, I know that they can be a bit of a, they're exhausting, right? Like I run one, they're absolutely exhausting. But for that one weekend a year, it's active. Everyone's happy. There's no complaining. It's just love. It's no online poisonous echo chambers of political feelings. It's just, hey man, it's great seeing you. I love this brand. I love this table. Like it's one of the best things about what we do. And I imagine it can be a bit exhausting for you guys, but I've always loved it.
Yeah. It's amazing what you miss when you're not able to do it, right? You take so many things for granted, but I think we used to just squeeze so many of those in every year, somewhere between 10 and 15, it seemed like at one point. But if you could do one of those a quarter, I think that'd be great.
Oh, okay. All right. Last question. You bring it up. What is the things that you hate the most? Give me two things you hate the most at these events that you wish could be easily fixed and changed.
Well, I mean, the obvious one is people getting too smashed, but I don't feel like that's a widespread problem. And it's just a kind of a hazard of how do you get around that? We try to do measure pours and all the rest of it, but.
There are things you can do that will decrease it, but you will, from what I've seen, you will always have the issue. So one of the things is no discounted tickets. If you do $20 tickets last minute just to fill the room, there's going to be party animals there. You can avoid that by doing no discounted tickets, measured pours, and dump buckets on every single table to encourage spitting, but you're still going to have a couple. But I've learned that in this market in particular, it's gotten lighter and lighter each year, where less and less people, because they're return customers, they know how to pace themselves, lots of foods, lots of carbs. But besides that, what's the biggest pain point for you guys? They got to be expensive to run in LA, I imagine.
I've never done one in LA yet. I think I've only done the whiskey show in San Francisco over here. But we did a lot in Asia, like the Whiskey Live in Manila is one of my favorite whiskey shows in the world. I think probably the thing I hate most now about them is every single consumer thinks that the brand ambassador has an under-the-counter pour for them. Everyone. I don't have unlimited supplies of that. Sometimes it's not there. So please don't ask. If you ask, you're probably going to struggle to get one. It might have gone by then.
So the brazenness of the attendees can be a bit much.
Yeah, it's always, everyone knows there's a pocket dram. So it's and you know, you have to qualify for that.
I thought for sure that the number one complaint would be using a licensed venue.
Like, well, in Texas, yeah, like when you can't take the samples with you, right? So if you have half a bottle of 30-year-old there, which you should never have half a bottle of 30-year-old left, you can't take the samples home. You can't just walk in any old bottle that you know that you could normally do in another state. I guess the one thing which is just a byproduct of the nature of the show is that repetition. You know, when you're repeating, see, when you get like a you're able to congregate like 10 or 12 or 15 people around your table, and you're able to bring out a special bottle and hit everyone with the chat at once, that feels like a success, because, you know, it does get exhausting. You feel like a bit of a whiskey robot at these things, but that's just the nature of it, right? People are trying to get around and see as much and taste as much as they can. So I look forward to the next one though.
So am I right in saying everything I love doing about a whiskey fair, bringing in a random bottle to give to friends and people that I know a lot about whiskey, and then taking the stock from the counter and probably having like a bit of an after party in the lovely hotel room that's usually linked to the whiskey suite, the whiskey event. I can't do any of that. Am I right in saying that?
In Texas.
You mean in Texas?
In Texas, yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you can't do that if they use a licensed venue, but all of our events are unlicensed so that you can literally bring in. Dave did this awesome thing a couple years ago, which I still remember. I don't know if you remember or not, Dave, but you guys did a deconstruction of your 26-year-old Caribbean cask. Was that 21-year-old?
21 Caribbean cask, yeah.
Yeah. So he brought in awesome. Samples of 21-year, different proof, and then before it hit the rum cask, after it hit the rum cask. So in Texas, you have to either buy your own product at a markup, right? So you have to buy it from a liquor store who sells it to the hotel, and there's a whole layer of cost. Or you can use an unlicensed venue. You guys can pull samples from the distributor and then just walk them in and then leave with what's left. So your awesome after party in the hotel room, which goes back to my last question, a lot of fun happening on the road, you can still do if it's an unlicensed venue.
Okay, so that's good. I can still sign myself up quite comfortably for your one when it happens then.
Yes, yeah. We could still have all of you guys there. And I think you guys normally have your own corner set up. You've never been to one of mine, right, Dave? I don't think so.
Me?
Yeah.
I have, yeah.
So I just...
I've been to one or two.
Like, did you go to the one with Gene that second year?
Remember we had them, there was the... I did a little DJ set after it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. I remember now. Yeah.
So we had to do, was sick.
Yeah, it was a nice venue. Super great. They had floor-to-ceiling projector screens that are 270 degrees, 280 degrees.
That's amazing.
So we could play awesome floor-to-ceiling projections that are wrapped around the room. The problem is it was too small for the amount of people we had. And an after party doesn't make a lot of sense with hundreds of people versus a few dozen drunk people in your hotel room. So we had people who had too much, way too much. And so we did away with the after party. After the year that Dave DJed, we that was the last one.
I learned something very valuable that night from Ian from Smoking and Toasting.
Smoking and Toasting, yeah.
So Ian comes up to me, right? And he's standing right next to me as I'm playing some music. You know, there weren't that many people there. It kind of thinned out. And we're trying to talk and the music's loud and he's like, hold up. And he just goes, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he just turns down the mid. So, you know, in the mixer, you've got the bass, the mid and the treble. He turns down the mid and the music's still playing. You can hear the bass and everything, but it just attenuated that frequency. And he's like, this is how we can converse now. You can turn it back up in a minute, but this is how you can just have a quick chat with someone if they come up to you without affecting the sound level for the whole venue.
Sure. I remember this story because Ian works in audio engineering and music in that realm. But I remember you being blown away that Ian was like, yeah, man, just do this and we can talk. Like, it doesn't have to be so loud.
Well, I felt a bit dumb for not knowing that, but, you know, Ian was obviously more experienced and he's like, I got you. I'll teach you something.
Well, listen, I appreciate both you guys' times today. It'll air this Friday. If there's anything you want to give a shout out, anything people want to follow you on your socials, feel free to mention it now. And yeah, thanks so much, guys.
Instagram is Dave in Paradise. Paradise spelt with a C.
And just search for me on Instagram, Neil Strachan. I'm sure I'll pop up at the top. I've got a silly at. It's nstrach87, if you can remember that. But please follow away. Christopher, and I'll have to send you a bottle of 15 single barrel, seeing as it was your wedding drop.
Was it
the old one or the new one?
We've been talking about what to replace it. So we're coming up on our 10-year anniversary. we've been together 15 years, but we're coming up on our 10-year wedding anniversary. We've been trying to figure out, I feel like it needs to be a bottle of Balvenie. Like the next wedding bottle needs to continue that tradition. So we're looking now, we looked at a couple of Scotch Malt Whiskey Society bottlings from you guys, but we have not decided yet. We've got a little time to figure it out.
Yeah, I found a lovely Burnside from Adelphi a year or so ago. Oh, me. Oh, well, what dram. 11-year-old Burnside. Oof.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm telling you, let's talk to William Grant. Those 10, 11-year-old bottlings, I bet were just brilliant. They don't have to be sherry. It could be virgin oak. It could be ex-bourbon. I want to see a series on the younger keep. Let me talk to Brian. Do an email invitation. Let's let me convince him. Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Thank you very much. All right. Cheers.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.